From Lansing Community College, this is LCC Connect, and this is Land Stories, with me, David Seawick. Each episode explores a different topic, such as the people, business, neighborhoods, communities, buildings, and other phenomena that make up the history of our college and our region. We tell stories, and in doing so, we connect the past to the present. Welcome to this episode of Land Stories, and I am going to start off this episode of Land Stories by telling you a little story, because as I tell that story, you will learn what the subject of this episode is about. We are recording this episode in the studios, where I have recorded many of them, though not all, and on the way here to this lovely studio, I drove right down Lenawee Street in downtown Lansing. When I got to the corner of Lenawee and Townsend, I was heading east on Lenawee Street, so I turned left onto Townsend and snaked my way through downtown Lansing to our studios here at the campus of Lansing Community College. And the reason why I took that route is because I wanted to drive by the building that stands on the corner of Lenawee and Townsend Street, because on this episode of Land Stories, we are going to talk about the building that used to stand on the corner of Lenawee and Townsend Streets in downtown Lansing, Michigan, USA, that at one time housed Lansing's YMCA chapter. I have a lovely guest, a special guest here with me today to tell us a bit about part of that building that we will get into during our discussion. Welcome, Daniel.
Thank you, David.
And we are very glad to have you. Daniel Seawick is a local sign maker here in Lansing, and he is an expert on the history of a lot of the signs that are around Lansing, and the sign that stood in front of this building that we're going to talk about today. Well, it is the part of the building that survives. The building itself was demolished a few years ago, and Metro Place Apartments were built in its place, and that is the structure that currently occupies the corner of Lenawee and Townsend Streets, and the whole block, actually, in downtown Lansing. But that building at one time had a sign in front of it, a really cool sign, actually, and that sign is still around. It's actually on the corner of, I guess that would be, Shiawassee Street and Seymour Avenue, right in downtown Lansing, on Lansing Community College's downtown Lansing campus. And so that building that once had that sign standing in front of it was historically significant for a variety of reasons here in Lansing. And in considering the history, therefore, of the block that that building's on, and we're really going to talk about that building almost exclusively on this episode and the sign that was in front of it. But before we get to that, because I am a historian and this show talks about history, we're going to give a little bit of a history behind not only the organization that was in that building, but we'll talk about the building of the building itself and the design elements that went into it. Those are the reasons why it was historically significant after all. And then that'll get us into a moment where we will discuss that sign and why it is an important part of that building that survives to this day when the rest of the structure does not. So that gets us to actually starting out talking about the Y. Many of you have probably heard of the Y before. Some of you have probably gone to the Y before. The Y is the YMCA, and those initials are quite familiar to, I imagine, most of the folks listening to this show. It stands for Young Men's Christian Association, and the YMCA is actually an organization that was started in the United Kingdom, but it quickly gained an American version, an American chapter, if you will, and many Y chapters actually became an important part of American communities beginning in the late 1800s. And Lansing was no different than that. So Lansing had a YMCA chapter. And actually, the Lansing Y has existed in a few locations through the years. And again, we are going to talk about the Lansing Y that, occupied the building there at the corner of Townsend and Lenawee Streets for a number of years. And Lansing's Y actually started in the late 1800s, not that long after the International YMCA was established. And in Lansing, just like in other cities in the United States and in Britain and elsewhere, they had Y chapters. These were places where you could go to play basketball or play volleyball or, very importantly, attend church services. Ys early on were organized under evangelical Christian principles and offered a Protestant service for worshipers. And they were also places that people could find lodging at when they first came into a community. So keep in mind, late 1800s, the world is quite a bit different than it is now for travelers, and you couldn't just go into a town and find hotels everywhere to book a room in, especially a smaller place like Lansing. And so in communities that had Ys, these were places that served as a hostel and a place, therefore, that people could find lodging. So that is a little bit of a history of the Y, and Lansing's Y would have served certainly all those functions and roles as it grew during the late 1800s and into the early 1900s. And that growth, actually, is ultimately why the Y needed to have its own building. And the Y, again, was in a few locations in its early years. But then after World War II, so we are skipping the hands of time forward a bit, but we definitely want to get into considering this building that the show is going to discuss. So after World War II, the Lansing YMCA chapter, like many organizations in Lansing, is on the growth. The economy is booming, the population is booming, and they need a new building. So it's time to build a new building, and in the year 1949, the building that we are discussing now, the former YMCA building at the corner of Linaway and Townsend Streets in downtown Lansing, construction began on it in 1949. So, as organizations typically do, when they decided that they needed a building such as this constructed, they solicited bids from local contractors. And as it turns out, the Francis Corr Construction and Development Company was the company that won the bid and ended up developing the property and arranging for the construction of this building. Now, the Francis Corr Company had a well-known legacy in this area. They were responsible for a lot of the projects, including some that are still here. The Frandor Shopping Center, which kind of sits right there where East Lansing and Lansing meet, that is probably the most well-known of the existing Francis Corr projects, and Frandor bears its name, actually, from Francis and Doris Corr, the husband and wife of the company name. So that is the general contractor that did the construction work on the building. Now, the architectural firm that designed the building also places it very much in the Lansing historically significant building category, because that would be the Bowd and Munson architectural firm. They designed many buildings in downtown Lansing, actually, so I could list several of them. The one that comes to my mind immediately is St. Mary Cathedral, right there on Seymour Street, basically as Seymour Street ends there into, I believe that is Ottawa Street, there in downtown Lansing. And that building was built as a parish church, and then when the Diocese of Lansing was established in 1937, became a cathedral. So the Bowd and Munson architectural firm has had a lot of commissions over the years through Lansing, and in 1949, that was the company that got the commission to build this building. So it is, therefore, 1949, ground has been broken, and the construction commences. Now, this is where the architectural design comes into the story here. And the building was an interesting building to look at because, quite frankly, it blended two architectural styles that you don't usually see blended. And its location, where it was in downtown Lansing, I think probably has something to do with why the architect chose to really merge, or to marry, if you will, two styles. One that had been very prominent in about the 20 years up to the point where that building was built. And then the other would become very prominent in the 20 years that would follow, and really about 30 years that would follow the construction of that building. And these two styles would be the Art Deco movement and the mid-century modern movement. This building really did blend both of those styles. And so Art Deco architecture is characterized, well, it really is defined by its name, art and decoration, but Art Deco architecture was a movement that emphasized the blending of industrial forms and of the built-up, mechanical, human-created world. Keep in mind, Art Deco architecture was very prominent in the 1920s and 30s especially. In the 1920s, America is absolutely booming in a commercial and industrial economic growth cycle that it really hadn't seen the likes of before in terms of all of the buildings that came out of it. And the Art Deco movement, therefore, wanted to take that emphasis of industrial production and an ordered world, but then add into it artistic motifs that softened the design styles up a bit, and also oftentimes borrowed, almost ironically so, from obscure or classical architectural elements. Now, in downtown Lansing, one of the very well-known Art Deco buildings that is still around is the Knapps Building. And that building served a variety of functions through the years. For its longest existence, it was a well-known department store in Lansing. And that building exhibits in its color, as well as some of the architectural styles, this merging of industrial sort of very rigid design forms and what seems to be kind of the opposite, which are these softer artistic motifs. So Art Deco buildings oftentimes had a really rigid symmetry to them, but yet at the same time, the edges were rounded. And symmetry maybe would be accompanied by something that would break the otherwise oftentimes vertically oriented line structures that these building facades had. Now, if that sounds like a really interesting way to design a building, I would agree with you, it is. The mid-century modernist movement actually in some ways built upon one aspect of the Art Deco movement, and that would be the idea of rigid industrial production forming coming into what a building looks like, and of course also how it was built. And that is a very important part of the story too. But then mid-century modernism really was a break from the prior architectural forms too, in the sense that mid-century modern buildings really removed almost all of the softer artistic elements that one might put in a building, and instead really emphasized the functionality of a building above all else, and the use of materials that either hadn't existed before or had not existed in a way that architects and construction companies could use them. So, for example, we had the steel frame superstructure construction method that comes out of the early 1900s. And that is what makes buildings like the Empire State Building in New York or the Penobscot Building in Detroit, which are very well-known Art Deco skyscrapers that were built at that time period, possible. After World War II, there's an architectural innovation that comes in where the steel superstructure is forming the basis of buildings, but then screens of materials are being put to create facades that previously would not be possible. So you have buildings that the entire facade is nothing but glass. And the glass has been hung like a screen protruding from the steel superstructure and oftentimes masonry products that are included in the walls as well. So in downtown Lansing, again, we go back to that corner of Townsend and Lenaway Street and consider this building right here. It not only merged those two major architectural styles, but it was sitting literally in between buildings that would have shared either that prior or that former architectural style. So metaphorically speaking, but also very real in the physical sense, you had the structure sitting there that bridged these two architectural movements. And the style of that building, it really did reflect this. So imagine you're standing. My listeners, my loyal listeners of this program know that sometimes we take imaginary walks, and by golly, we're going to take an imaginary walk right now. And we are walking in our imaginary world down to Townsend Street, and we have just left the lovely State Capitol building. So we are on the south side of the State Capitol building, and we're walking down Townsend Street. And let's pretend it's the year 1960 or so, and we are standing in front of the YMCA building. What are we looking at?
Well, David, we're going to encounter a sign that is really, in a lot of ways, a mini version of the building it stands in front of, which was, of course, by design. In around 1960, what you would have saw or seen was a recessed area of the sign with the letters YMCA prominently displayed in a vertical fashion. But below that would have been what we would refer to nowadays as a little reader board. And it's interesting, Dave, because that the sign itself almost resembled what you would have expected to see in front of a Protestant-type church at the time.
Okay.
And the word Christian that you mentioned earlier in the name of YMCA, with the sign design, was not by accident.
Sure.
The reader board was, obviously, they didn't have the technology at the time for digital display boards and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
So if people can imagine, for lack of a better description, a menu.
Okay.
So the little reader board would have allowed for messages to be changed out by sliding letters in and out.
Okay.
And people are familiar with these types
of
signs.
Sure.
They're still quite prominent in one form or another nowadays.
We have one that I believe you designed, actually, that hangs over the entrance to the Black Box Theater here in the Gannon Building on Lansing Community College's campus. Is that correct?
That is correct.
So, folks, we have a nearby example.
Yeah. Another example. So this sign, of course, does still exist, David. Why don't you tell us just a little bit about where the sign can be seen nowadays?
Oh,
of
sure.
Course, it is not exactly as it was then. But
Exactly. And that sign, as I've mentioned before, does indeed still exist. As Dan pointed out, it's really what's left of that building. But it, on our imaginary walk, we're going to have to keep walking in order to find where that sign's located now. What we'll actually have to do is turn our direction the other way and walk north back towards the State Capitol building. And then we're actually going to walk around the Capitol building, continue back on the same street. It's now called Seymour Street when we're on the north side of the Capitol building, but it's the same road essentially in Lansing. And then we walk just a few blocks, and there it is. There's the sign. So basically, we just moved it about 7 or 8 blocks north, and it sits on the corner of Seymour Street and Shiawassee there on Lansing Community College's campus. So how that sign got there is actually related to sort of the second half of the story of the history of that building. So, and we can have two imaginary walks. By golly, it's my show. We can walk wherever we want to. And so we're having our two imaginary walks right now. We'll go back to our imaginary walk from 1960, though, for a moment. And we're standing in front of that building. And what we are seeing is a brick building that it's built using really three primary materials. It has a steel superstructure. It has a concrete block that forms the basis of most of the walls. And then it has a brick veneer or facade, and the brick is laid right over the concrete block. And this is a common way that many buildings are built.
Yes, for sure.
So not unusual there, but as we stand at the building, we can see right literally floor by floor, not only the mid-century modernism movement that's taking off as this building is being built, but then also, we can see the chapter being closed, if you will, on the Art Deco movement.
Absolutely.
Right, because we have that sign that's staring right at us.
For sure. And the sign is reflective of that, too. The sign is sort of shaped like an obelisk, although not exactly. But if I had to use one word to describe it for people that are not familiar with the sign at all, that is loosely how I would describe it. The base, though, keeping with the Art Deco theme, the base of the sign, the bottom 3 feet or so, is wider than the top. So it almost looks like a mini Art Deco skyscraper, although with the elements of mid-century modern built into it, as David just described. So it definitely fits in well with the building. And again, that was by design. Mm-hmm. A sign like this would have been built using the same types of materials that the building itself was. It's definitely intended to fit in with the sign, mm-hmm. as discussed earlier.
Sure. And those materials would have been, what, steel rebar concrete for part of it?
Yes, and then concrete block also to decorate it, decorative block.
Sure.
What we call nowadays precast, although it's not exactly a precast, but a similar type of product.
And is that a masonry product?
It is, yeah. Portland cement is going to be the bulk of it.
Okay.
But there's also a granite detail on the bottom of the sign, too, which is very interesting to me to think about.
Yeah.
That, again, is going to be kind of an Art Deco detail.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But it also, of course, adds stability to it as well.
Okay. And on that latter point, we should never forget that as pretty as a building it is or can be, it has to function. People build buildings
for
a reason, right?
And a sign's the same way.
A sign's no different.
As I've talked about in previous episode, what is the most basic purpose of a sign? It's communication.
Yeah, communication, right.
So, but signs communicate a lot, if you think about it. They communicate the message that's on it. In this case, the most prominent part was the words YMCA. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you want to tell people that this is the YMCA building.
Sure.
But also, this sign was had other forms of communication, and namely in the form of the reader board below. You know, that would have told events happening there. The services, obviously, would have been put there.
Yep.
And that sort of thing. But also, what I like to call kind of the subconscious communication that the sign is capable of are things like the architectural details with it, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
So obviously this type of sign, it needs to be strong and sturdy like the building.
Yep.
The design harkening back to almost like a church sign.
Sure.
That would have been subconscious. One of the things I like about little signs like this is they're a mystery.
Yeah.
If you don't know the entire backstory of it, they're fun to explore. They're fun to investigate. Lansing is just full of things like this. You know, we're really fortunate to live in a community like this for a lot of reasons, but not the least of which is when you look at Lansing, especially the period this sign was built in and the building was built in, you know, it was a very busy and important community in the state of Michigan.
Absolutely.
So there's a lot of things like this to look around for if you know where to look and you can find them. If you go just a couple blocks south of where this sign currently sits, there is a building currently that houses the Walk in Truth Ministries. It's at the corner of Seymour and Genesee Street. Mm. But there's actually a very similar sign that sits in front of that building. So if people want to know what this one probably looked like in its heyday, you can look at that one now. And it's got a little reader board in it. It's encased in a lockable glass so people don't get mischievous and change the message out.
Sure.
But also has the name of the church above it.
Okay.
So the design is a bit different than what this one is, but it's the same basic type of concept.
Yeah, absolutely. And you bring up a really good point about looking out for things that maybe sometimes you might not notice. And there's a reason why we take imaginary walks and not drives. And that is because when we are walking, we are allowed to do things that would be very dangerous while we're driving, like read signs on buildings and look at cornerstones and whatnot.
Yes.
So,
well, that's a good point that you bring that up, though. The walking is very important, actually, because at the time, this neighborhood was obviously still a very walkable neighborhood.
Sure.
It was not an automobile neighborhood,
sure,
so to speak. And it still is to a lot of degree.
Sure.
But this sign, the reader board on it, was at a lower level than what one would expect if it was intended to be read from driving. So it's street level. It's one that is intended to be read when you're walking by.
Mm-hmm.
So the words YMCA at the top get your attention if you're driving by, but then, in theory, you go and park, or you've walked back to the area, and then you read what you're looking for information as far as service times or events they have going on there.
Sure.
That sort of thing.
Yep, absolutely. And in fact, we will wrap this episode of Land Stories up by the follow-up story, which is we've mentioned a few times, and that is that sign in its current form can actually still be seen. Again, it's at the corner of Seymour Street and Shiawassee Streets right here in downtown Lansing. And that sign, however, when you walk to see it now, you're going to notice that it does look slightly different than what Dan and I have described, and there's a reason for that, and that is because the sign and moving it to Lansing Community College's campus were donated by the current owners, or the then owners, of the structure, Julie Lawton Essa, and Lansing Community College has memorialized this donation, which we are very thankful of, and we continue to be, by one of the three plaques that we had installed as a restoration of that sign. And those plaques were designed and manufactured anew and installed. And then we also did some restoration work to the sign, too. It had some staining on it from the steel rebar within the concrete, corroding over time, and other things that happened to it. Well, a sign has been sitting outside for many years.
Yes, so. And very quickly. Part of the stain on there tells us what the YMCA letters were made out of. They were bronze or copper, probably perhaps both over the course of the sign's life because of the patina that you can see before it was restored. That tells you what the letters were made out of.
Sure. Very good point. And thank you for bringing that to our discussion, Dan. And the last thing I'll say about this sign, and we will indeed conclude this episode of Land Stories with this, is the sign in its current form has some absolutely lovely artwork on it. It is a reproduction of stained glass in a form that looks somewhat like what would have been on a sign similar to that at a time. And that was designed by our very own Bruce Mackley here at Lansing Community College. So kudos to Bruce for designing that
absolutely.
And being a part of bringing that incredible sign back to life. And in doing so, preserving one little element of the building that the rest of it is no longer here. So will be how we conclude our episode of Land Stories. I want to thank you, Dan, very much for coming in and giving us some incredible information and insight into that sign in that building.
You're very welcome. Pleasure is mine.
You've been listening to Land Stories with me, David Siewick. For more information on this program and to stream past episodes, visit lccconnect.org. LCC Connect is the official home of the voices, vibes, and vision of Lansing Community College, offering hours of original and exciting programming. Hosted by faculty, staff, and community members, LCC Connect explores our college's work in the community, important topics in higher education, and our vision for the future. Catch the vibe on 89.7 FM or online at lccconnect.org. Until next time, remember, keep telling good stories.